Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have a good old friend of the Soapbox, John Gold. He's going to explain the 9/11 connection to with Saudi Arabia and the Bin Laden family and the royal family. John Gold is a self-described truth advocate for 9/11, an advocate for the victims' families to get justice. And as soon as I heard about the alleged accusation that Saudi Arabia funded 9/11, my first thought was to have John on the show because he really is up to speed and stays current with that subject. And John Gold is one of our podcasters on the Soapbox People's Network, and he has a show called We Were Lied To About 9/11. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with our good friend John Gold. John Gold, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hey, Cindy, how are you?
I'm doing okay. So let's, our listeners don't know a little glitch we just had, so I won't tell them. But anyway, Saudi Arabia has been in the news lately, and it's been in the news in a big way. First of all, we have a comparison between quote unquote ISIS in Saudi Arabia, where ISIS is supposedly beheading people, but Saudi Arabia beheads a couple dozen at least people every month. It's a very violent regime. It's very oppressive regime. But their king, Abdullah, just passed away, and of course, Obama went there and praised Abdullah. You said it was a slap in the face to the families of the 9/11 victims. And then recently we had Moussaoui come out and say that Saudi Arabia funded 9/11. And we also know that most of the hijackers, if we believe the official story of 9/11, were from Saudi Arabia. And when all of this Saudi Arabia stuff starts to pop up, I think of you because you've done a lot of research around the Saudi Arabia 9/11 connection. So hopefully you can bring a little clarity to the subject and your expertise. So try and make sense of what I'm just asking you.
Okay. I'd first like to point people to an article written by Glenn Greenwald about the way Obama treats King Abdullah versus the way that Hugo Chavez was treated. I don't know the name of it, but it's at firstlook.org. One thing that people need to understand about the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia is that we've been partners in crime with them for years. And I can talk about the Afghanistan-Russia war, where the CIA, the Saudis, and the Pakistani ISI collaborated to fund, train, arm the Mujahideen. And then into the 90s, we collaborated with the Saudis with sending whatever you want to call them, rebels, moderate rebels, freedom fighters, terrorists.
Well, what's a moderate rebel, really?
I know. I love that.
We're always supporting the moderate rebels, whatever the heck that means.
Yep. And into Bosnia. We were sending them into Bosnia. And, you know, through the 90s, the Saudis were protected from within the different agencies. For instance, there was somebody, an FBI agent who was doing an investigation into terrorist financing, and he called his investigation vulgar betrayal. And he started to get into people like Al-Qaeda, who proclaimed to be friends with Dick Cheney and so forth.
And who is Al-Qaeda?
He was a Saudi national, a billionaire. And his investigation was shut down. And one of the things when Bush first came into office, one of the first things that he did was to tell the different alphabet agencies, the intelligence agencies, to back off the Saudis and the bin Ladens. And during the 90s, as Greg Palast noted, the policy was pretty much the same, but under Clinton, it was supposedly slow go, but under Bush, it was no go. So,
as a matter of fact, they called one of the Saudi royals Prince Bandar. Wasn't his nickname Bandar Bush?
Correct. And we'll get into him in a second. So we've been partners in crime for years, and we protected them prior to 9/11. We protected them even harder or even stronger after 9/11. With regards to their relationship to terrorism and so forth. So there was an investigation done by the House and the Senate called the Joint Congressional Inquiry. There's a longer name for it. The Jersey Girls came up with an acronym for it, JICI, and they called it the JICI. But anyway, it was
the first... And the Jersey Girls, we have to say who they are.
The Jersey Girls are Lori Van Auken and Mindy Kleinberg, Patty Cassazza, and Kristen Brottweiser, who are four widows who lost their husbands on 9/11. They were responsible for the creation of the 9/11 Commission and so forth. Anyway, the Joint Congressional Inquiry, which Bush and Cheney tried to stop from happening altogether, released a report. And that report had 28 redacted pages. And it's pretty much known, you know, what's within those, what's the focus of those pages. And the focus is Saudi Arabia's support for some of the hijackers. And people like Senator Bob Graham has been trying to get them released for years. The family members have been trying to get them released for years. The Jersey Girls released a petition in late 2006 calling for their declassification, among other documents. We had 17,000 signatures on their petition. They took it to D.C. and nothing happened. So there has been a fight for a long time to get these 28 redacted pages released having to do with Saudi Arabia. And recently, there has been a big push coming from within D.C., actually, from different people like Representative Thomas Massie, Walter Jones, and Bob Graham to get these 28 redacted pages released. And one of the reasons that there is a big push is because in late December 2013, a lower court decided that the families can actually sue some of the Saudis. Whereas before, you know, they were immune. The Saudis were immune according to our laws and according to different judgments by different courts because the Bush and Obama administrations protected Saudi Arabia against the families for years, and the courts were saying no, no, no. And finally, they got the opportunity. So, the 28 redacted pages, there's a push on right now to get them released. Now, King Abdullah died. And Obama was on his way to the Taj Mahal. in India and decided to go pay his respects for King Abdullah. And some of the people that he brought with him were John McCain, who absolutely loves the 9/11 Commission's report, which absolved the government of Saudi Arabia. He brought with him James A. Baker, whose law firm, Baker Botts, represented the Saudis very early on against the lawsuit brought on by the families. He brought Condoleezza Rice with him, who lied before the 9/11 Commission and had an oil rig named after her. And so he went to pay his respects. He met with the new King Salman, who is actually listed as a defendant in a lawsuit brought on by the 9/11 family members as someone having supported Al-Qaeda and so forth. So that whole spectacle on top of what you mentioned with regards to the beheadings and on top of the Saudi support for ISIS. I mean, this was such a huge slap in the face to the 9/11 family members, you know, who've been trying to get those 28 redacted pages released so that they can bring it into a courtroom against Saudi Arabia. And when 9/11 makes it into a courtroom, we actually find out a lot more things than we did, you know, during things like the 9/11 Commission and, or the military tribunals, which are in a very controlled setting. When 9/11 is in the courts, for instance, one of the reasons Saudi Arabia is in the news right now is because of Zacharias Moussaoui, the supposed 20th hijacker, who was arrested within the United States because of suspicions at a flight school. I believe the flight school instructors called it into the FBI, and I think he was arrested. And anyway, he has come out saying that some of the Saudi royals, some of the people that are part of the Saudi government, helped to fund Al-Qaeda, helped to finance some of the hijackers. And so the families are using his statement. The lawyers actually went to meet with him and took his statements and are submitting it within their lawsuit. And some of the people that Zacharias Moussaoui mentioned were Prince Bandar, who is known as Bandar Bush. As you said, Turki Al-Fazl, who was the head of their intelligence at one time, who's a very interesting character. Another person he names is somebody who owned part of Fox News, who's actually just getting rid of most of his stock in Fox News for some reason. And so anyway, that's in the news right now.
Well, what do you have a theory about why the U.S. government protects the Saudi royal family? And it's you don't think it's completely about oil?
Well, it's not really a theory. You know, people say that we're protecting Saudi Arabia because they supply us oil, or because of the control that they have over the oil markets and so forth, which, by the way, the United States and Saudi Arabia apparently have collaborated on lowering the prices of oil to bankrupt Russia. It's not just about that. It's about the fact that many people in the United States benefit from Saudi Arabian money. And to bring up as an example, you could say the Bush family, you know, benefited from Saudi Arabia's money. Michael Moore's film, Fahrenheit 9/11, talked about how much Saudi money is in the United States. And it was like a very large percentage. So it's about that. It's about their influence within the region. And it's also about, you know, their connections to terrorism, which we have used. You know, so it's not really a theory. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so right now there's a big fight to get these 28 redacted pages released. And one of the things that's very interesting, you know, the families want to bring it into a courtroom, and I mentioned Moussaoui. During his sentencing phase, FBI agent Michael Anticef was made to admit that FBI was well aware of the ideas of al-Qaeda using planes as weapons and so on and so forth. You know, we were told repeatedly that nobody had any warnings and
right.
nobody had any idea that, you know, this could happen. So when you bring it into a courtroom, again, it's important because things come out. The 28 redacted pages, the 9/11 commission, which was headed by Philip Zelikow, somebody who belongs in jail, and I can't say that enough, they apparently looked into the allegations within the 28 redacted pages and absolved the government of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia keeps pointing to the 9/11 report every time somebody mentions the 28 redacted pages, uh-huh. saying, look, we were absolved. Uh-huh. And the reason that the 9/11 commission's report absolved them is because of Philip Zelikow. Basically, he blocked half of the interview requests for Saudi investigators. He made it very difficult for people to gain access to the 28 redacted pages of the Joint Congressional Inquiry. In fact, one of the Saudi investigators, Dana Lieseman, tried to gain access to them, and she was actually from the Joint Congressional Inquiry brought over to the 9/11 Commission and was actually one of the authors of the 28 redacted pages. He made it difficult for her to get to them, so she went through a back channel to get to them, and as a result of that, Zelikow fired her. He and Dieter Snell took part in a, quote, late-night editing session to remove Saudi support for the hijackers from the 9/11 report and put it into footnotes in the back of the book. And it's interesting to note, there are things called memoranda for the record from the 9/11 Commission, which is basically a description of each of the interviews, a handwritten description of each of the interviews that took place with witnesses. And when you look at the MFRs for the people they spoke to with regards to the Saudi plot, I think it's even mentioned in the memorandums for the record that these people are not trustworthy and so on and so forth. And yet Saudi Arabia was absolved. Now, it's interesting to note that Prince Bandar, who is mentioned in the 28 redacted pages as being connected to money of two of the hijackers in San Diego, his memorandum for the record is completely redacted for some reason. So that's another issue. You know, release the 28 redacted pages, but also release the entirety of the 9/11 Commission's documents, which only 35% of have been released so far, and many of them are greatly redacted. So that's another fight entirely. I don't know what else to say.
Well, do you have another question? Why, if Saudi Arabia is such great friends with us, why would they potentially finance this attack against?
Well, that's a very, very, very good question. And I think that we need to ask people like George Tenet, who was good friends with Bandar, mm-hmm. About that. I think we need to talk about possible collaborations between the CIA and the GID. you know, when Bush and Cheney testified before the 9/11 Commission, people might remember They refuse to do so under oath. They refuse to have any transcripts or recordings. And they refuse to do so separately. They had to do it together. One of the 9/11 commissioners, John Lehman, pressed George Bush on the matter of Bandar and money connected to the hijackers, to two of the hijackers. And Bush, quote, dodged the questions, end quote. And as I've been saying a lot lately, I don't know what country we live in, but that to me is reason enough to bring George W. Bush on the stand to take questions on this and, of course, many other issues. He refused to answer questions. I mean, that's just absurd to me.
Well, look, we just had the CIA torture report come out. Not the CIA, the Senate torture report come out in December, and it was quickly removed from the news for some other distraction came up. But, you know, the regime, the empire,
Wasn't it the Ebola virus?
Something like that. You know, just the empire is just really complicit. I mean, the Obama regime refuses to look into the torture report and any of these things that are coming up. And as a matter of fact, his Justice Department prosecutes protesters and whistleblowers and protects the true criminals.
Yeah, he has retaliated against more whistleblowers and used the Espionage Act more than any other president, worse than Bush. I mean, Jesus, look at Bradley, Chelsea, and Manning.
Right.
There's just so many instances of that. And one thing I want to bring up about Obama is that he promised 9/11 family member Kristen Brauweiser, who was a September 11th advocate or Jersey girl, and Bill Doyle, who lost his son, I think, Joey Doyle or Joe Doyle, on 9/11. He promised the both of them that he would release the 28 redacted pages of the Joint Congressional Inquiry. So, again, the 9/11 report absolved them. So we have two different reports, and they're conflicting. And the reason that they're conflicting is because of Philip Zelikow, Dieter Snell, people I think belong in prison. Dieter Snell, let me just tell you about something that he did.
Well, tell us, who is Dieter Snell? That's actually the first time I've ever heard this person's name.
He was a staffer on the 9/11 Commission. He's a lawyer. He recently, or not recently, within the last few years, there was a court in New York, I believe, that was trying to pin the blame for 9/11 on Iran. And he came in and testified. And as a result, the court ruled that Iran was responsible for 9/11. With such flimsy information, you know, I think information had to do with the hijackers passing through Iran or something to that effect. Well, they passed through Germany. You know, does that mean Germany's responsible for 9/11? It's just so ridiculous. And with all of the information about Saudi Arabia, he was, you know, greatly responsible for the 9/11 report absolving him. And another thing, another big thing, the 9/11 Commission's report said that ultimately the source of the funding for the attacks was of little practical significance. So,
Well, is there, at the point of 9/11, you know, in 2001, we know that Osama bin Laden, I don't even know. It's just really hard to determine if he was even alive at the time or what, who this person really was. Did he have connections to the Saudi royal family?
Yes, my God. One of the things Zacharias Moussaoui brought in his testimony that they submitted was the fact that the Bin Laden family still supported Osama Bin Laden even after they...
You mean the Saudi royal family supported Osama Bin Laden? Or the Bin Laden family supported
Bin Laden? I think both. I think the Bin Laden family and the Saudis helped to support him.
Is it true that, you know, after 9/11, all flights were grounded? We know that's true. Is it true that the U.S. government allowed members of the Bin Laden family to leave the country?
Yes.
Via airplane?
There are conflicting accounts as to when flights were allowed back in the air and whether or not the Saudis... I know there was restricted flights, I think, to Kentucky, that they were allowed to pick up Bin Ladens and members of the Saudis' royal family and fly them out of the United States. One of the interesting things about that is that the 9/11 Commission report released an addendum after the release of the 9/11 report, which said that no terrorists were allowed to leave the country during that time. And one of Khalil Bin Laden, who was a brother of Osama Bin Laden, was apparently wanted for terrorism, I think, in Brazil. And he was on one of those flights and allowed to leave the country. That was decided, I think, Richard Clark said, either by the State Department or the White House. But Bandar, you know, I think he talked to George Bush about getting the Saudis out of the country. So that's another thing. You know, Prince Bandar and George Bush were talking about the need for, quote, decisive action in Iraq months prior to 9/11.
Right.
You know.
Well, I know George Bush, the very first staff meeting after he was president, or the staff meeting or cabinet meeting, said, so how do we get Iraq? How do we get Saddam Hussein?
It was all about, quote, finding a way to do it. It was George Bush saying, go find me a way to do this.
Right. So that kind of appears that there was a lot of collaboration, that it maybe was an inside job.
Well, one of the things Richard Clark talked about was that in early 2001, I think between March and May, there were people within the Bush administration talking about creating a casus belli.
Right. A cause for war.
A cause for war to go into Iraq. I mean, there's so many things like that. My God. Elements within our government. When you look at 9/11 as a crime as opposed to an act of war, as with every crime, there are suspects for that crime. And I firmly believe, based on all of the information available, that elements within our government and other governments have more than earned the title of suspect for the crime of 9/11. I mean, you look at all the inconsistencies with regards to the story of 9/11, how convenient 9/11 was based on what their agenda was. You know, how they used 9/11, how they fought against investigations and didn't cooperate with investigations. I mean, in what world does it make sense not to seek truth, accountability, and justice for the murder of 2,976 people, especially considering the fact that we know we were lied to about that day, and especially considering how that day has been used? And yet, the corporate media has attacked and slandered people like me over the years and misrepresented people like me. You know, in what world does that make sense?
Right. Well, I mean, so what can we do about it, John Gold? Before we leave, I want you to tell us what we should do about it. And I mean, what's done is done. Like you said, those people were killed on 9/11, and literally millions have been murdered, displaced, lives ruined, tortured, countries destroyed, people injured, babies being born in these countries with birth defects, and children dying of cancer because of depleted uranium. I mean, it's just really, and I'm going to have to mark the time so Don can delete this, my engineer, but it really is a clusterfuck. But it appears to have been a planned one. And so at this point, what can we do about getting the truth about 9/11 and accountability? I mean, I want accountability. My son should still be alive.
Right. I know. It's a very tough question. You know, I firmly believe that, well, okay, just for instance, you talked about the torture report, how 9/11 is still being used. When the torture report came out, CIA Director John Brennan responded, and his remarks started with these exact words. It was 8:46 a.m., you know, and he was referring to 9/11 as the justification for what they did with regards to torture. This just happened. So 9/11 is being used for so many horrible things, as you mentioned. And so what can we do? Well, first, I think people need to learn a little bit about 9/11. I think facts are more important than theories. I think the story speaks for itself, really. I think that it's important to tell the next person, or, you know, that we were lied to about 9/11, you know, to get people to start saying that, to especially people with a voice. And I recently on my show, We Were Lied To About 9/11, I had Peter Van Buren on, who is somebody who writes about post-9/11 world issues, but doesn't really talk about the fact that we were lied to about 9/11, or doesn't write these articles through that filter or that lens, thinking that way. And I want people like that who have a voice, the Glenn Greenwalds, the Noam Chomskys, the whoever. When the corporate media doesn't do its job, it's the responsibility of the citizens, who, especially the ones with the voice, to tell the public what's going on. And, you know, I can't emphasize that enough. And so what do we do about accountability? I don't know. I don't trust the government to do an investigation or to hold people accountable. Right. You know, family members, one of the things they were hoping for from the 9/11 Commission was that it would hold people accountable. And it didn't. You know, the United Nations, I don't know that we could trust them. The International Criminal Court, we don't even adhere to international law. So... I would think that maybe a prosecutor, or, you know, this thing with the 9/11 families, with the lawsuit, that could open up a whole slew of doors that we weren't even aware of. You know, hopefully, my God, you know, people are saying that the Saudi thing is being pushed as, you know, limited hangout. It's the only cover-up, and believe me, Saudi Arabia is not the only cover-up with regards to 9/11. My God, there's so many other things, but people are afraid that it's going to be pushed like that, like it's the only cover-up, and it's not. But in the courtroom, so many things could come out.
Right. Well, we could get that cover-up, you know, hammer on that, and then, like you said, it could open up a whole can of worms about the lies and the cover-ups. To me, you know, and I've talked about this so many times, you know, all the Democrats or all the quote-unquote liberals, you know, they are so, they were so adamant that George Bush and Dick Cheney lied to get us into Iraq, not so much about Afghanistan. And you know why they're not so much about Afghanistan? Because they won't even consider that maybe they lied about 9/11. So if they lied about 9/11, then Afghanistan is a bad war. But Afghanistan was always a bad war. They didn't attack us on 9/11.
That's what I wanted to say. With regards to 9/11, hold the individuals responsible accountable, not entire nationalities, religions, ideologies. You know, I found out recently there's a term for that. It's called collective punishment, and it's a war crime.
Absolutely. It
goes against the Geneva Conventions.
Yeah, even if Afghanistan, anybody from Afghanistan did attack us, or Iraq, what we've done to those countries, absolutely war crimes and crimes against humanity. Well, John Gold, tell us a little bit about your show, and because I think that people will want more information about this, and I think going to the archives of your show would be a perfect way to start.
Absolutely. With regards to the Saudi Arabia issue, I recommend my interview with Paul Church. My show has recently been put on iTunes, I'm very happy to say. It's called We Were Lied to About 9/11. My next guest is actually Brian McGlinchey, who started www.28pages.org, who is very much behind this push to get these pages released. And that's today. So
we'll link to it with the newsletter for this show that's coming out on Sunday. And I also want to say that your show, We Were Lied to About 9/11, is available at the Soapbox People's Network, and we are very pleased to run it and to be affiliated with you and your important works. And I just had a cute little grandson come in my room, so this might be a good place to stop. So, John Gold, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, dear, for having me on.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. I hope you learned something, because I know I did. As always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer, Dee Dee Miller, my production assistant, John Gold for his work and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again, and I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. And please go to the Soapbox People's Network and go to Spring Rising and check out what we're doing in Washington, D.C. in March. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.